believe in taking care of infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you will be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Obamacare is failing, but in order to get back on the right track with health policy, people need to be informed. ObamacareWatch.org is your resource to understand what's happening with this law and what you can do to stay active, stay informed, and make positive change happen. ObamacareWatch.org. Visit us now.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com.
Thank you.
Cat Radio. Thank you for listening.
In Blank with Detailing Addictions. And our guest today is a therapist you've met before, Alice Wellens. Alice has a practice in Midtown Atlanta, and her contact information is Alice, A-L-Y-C-E, Wellens, W-E-L-L-O-N-S, at hushmail.com. Alice, very glad to have you here today.
This is always my favorite podcast radio show to come to.
And Alice brought up the topic of discussing boundaries.
Boundaries.
Often one of those really complicated issues when it comes to addiction, because it's in the world of addiction, addicts want to run over boundaries and enablers want to try and set the perfect boundary that's going to cure their addict, and neither of them are very successful at it. So this was a subject that you were inspired to bring to us. What's your general approach?
Well, working in addiction like we do, you at Atlanta Healing Center and me in my practice, one of the things that comes up a lot in working with families, as well as addicts themselves, working towards recovery, is how to set boundaries. And one of the things that really happens is a lot of times boundaries have a really paradoxical approach. So the very thing that you think is going to help is actually going to hurt. And the very thing that you think is going to hurt or not be helpful is actually the thing that becomes helpful. And the way that that is really epitomized is boundaries actually create safety. They don't create limitations.
Yeah.
Once people understand where the boundaries are, then there's all this space and freedom. So if you say your appointment starts at 2 o'clock, they don't have to wonder what time their appointment starts. And you say it ends at 2:50, they don't have to wonder what time it ends, which then creates all this space in the session for lots of work to be done. So that's kind of a general example of a boundary. But when we start getting into the nitty-gritty of our clients and their families, it becomes a lot more difficult to look at boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many different scenarios in which the boundaries are ineffectively set, or they're set in such a way that it just creates battles or it creates right. power struggles. And both people end up feeling like boundaries is just one of those therapeutic words that doesn't really work.
Right.
We are being joined at this moment by Dr. Blank.
Dr.
Welcome.
Susan
so
Blank.
Glad you're here.
I'm so glad to finally be here. Thank you for getting started without me.
So we were just beginning to talk about the complications of boundaries in addiction treatment from both sides of the equation, and how, you know, you have the goal of creating safety, and so often setting the boundaries makes things feel very unsafe.
Yeah. So we can jump right in and start with what that looks like in real life. And I think the place where it really becomes the hardest is parents and children.
Yes.
Because setting that type of boundary with the disease of addiction, a parent to set that with their child, and oftentimes we're talking about children under the age of 18 or even under the age of 25, but we're also talking about grown adult children in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
But in our world, when we're talking about parents and children, we're still always talking about legally adults.
Yeah.
Because at Atlanta Healing Center, we're working with 18 and up, and real often it's parents who are dealing with their young adults that have just not been able to succeed or to thrive or to take that next step.
Right, and same in my practice. I see adults 18 and up as well. So, yes, legally we are talking about right. adults who have parents. And the innate parental desire is to help.
Right, exactly. And to assume the role of caretaking, which they have done since this person came into their life as a newborn infant most of the time.
Right. And it's an instinctual thing. You know, there's an instinct most of the time to protect, you know, to provide in the beginning food, clothing, and shelter. And then, you know, the needs go on in order to thrive, survive, and thrive. When addiction blossoms, as we know, the thing that happens is the disease becomes very manipulative. And it wants to begin to create guilt and prey on vulnerable spots within relationships and within families to set up these roles of rescuer and enabler and angry person. And then, so a lot of times if you have parents, one person is typically more enabling. One parent is typically more frustrated or angry. So not only does the disease create this friction between parent and child, it also will then find its way in between the two parents, in between the sibling groups as well. And what happens slowly and then quickly is this very disruptive, dysregulated, non-homeostasis system is now starting to be at play. And when you have something that's out of homeostasis, you get these maladaptive coping skills that start to come into play. And then trying to set boundaries in that is very, very challenging.
Because the system's already unstable because of the person with the disease of addiction and the ripple effect that has throughout everyone that is in their sphere of influence. And then you have these responses from their loved ones, and we're talking about parents here, which might be an over-response. And so when you put this additional energy into a chaotic system, you don't get calmness. You get more chaos. And so sometimes those early attempts, especially at trying to stabilize the system, it's like being on a paddleboard and trying, rather than being still to stabilize it, you want to move this way and that. And now you're creating waves and even more chaos. And it's difficult for the family system to recover sometimes from that. And often we see everybody jumping off the paddleboard because we can't stabilize the system. So it's very difficult. And unfortunately, sometimes it grows out of the fact that people haven't set boundaries before now.
Yeah.
And now suddenly we want you to be an adult and act like an adult, even though we as parents have treated you like a child and enabled you for all these many years.
And I think in a little while we'll talk about some actual scenarios and kind of go over mm-hmm. what to do when and what some suggestions are. But I think that's a really great point, is that the other thing that happens is if there haven't been appropriate boundaries going on in the system or healthy boundaries, even before the addiction blossomed,
right?
But everybody's been doing okay, there haven't been any big, great issues, then the system is also not only sort of set up to not be able to do well, but they don't have any coping skills to go back and rely on because they've never haven't been developing mm-hmm. them all
right.
these years.
But, and part of what I find is that the system is in a double shock
mm-hmm.
because even though the boundaries weren't there, they were kind of working, and the addiction was actually growing and thriving and working for the addict. The person might be out there drinking and, you know, being social and having a good time, and the system doesn't really know anything bad is happening until they get a call from the police that the person just got a DUI. So the system's thrown into shock with legal issues, with addictions going on, with, oh my God, my child's in a dangerous place. And they're in this desperate, we're going to find the perfect words to fix this now.
But how many parents have you worked with that have, once the crisis is stabilized and you're doing some therapy with the family, and they can sit down and reflect, how many times have you heard them say, you know, when I look back on Jane or Joe, I can see all along from when they were little children, they had a very difficult time taking care of themselves,
mm-hmm.
soothing themselves, regulating themselves, dealing with interpersonal relationships. They just had a very difficult time focusing. Lots of different things that when parents are able to look back, they can start to see these seeds having bloomed a little bit way before the
right.
drugs and alcohol. And if the family weren't able to give the child boundaries then you're dealing with, you know, a five-alarm fire at age 16, 18, 20 that was really starting way long time ago. Yeah.
And that's where we talk about addiction being a childhood brain disease.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the hallmarks of not every person with addiction, but many people with addiction, is the fact that they have a difficult time handling stress.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this impaired stress burglar alarm system, they do have this difficult time, as you said, self-soothing. They have a difficult time managing a situation that their siblings or their peers, their friends, seem to be okay with. They're more at risk for developing PTSD. Their stress response is on hyper alert. Their burglar alarm system is set way too sensitive. And so this is part of that disease. And so, yes, the person and the family can often look back once, like you say, things are stabilized a little bit and see, yeah, the drugs and alcohol or addictive behaviors may not have been a part of early childhood or young adulthood, but some of these other telltale signs that we see of this childhood brain disease have been there for a while.
Right. And, you know, I have to make a connection to mindfulness, meditation, and body-based modalities like yoga, because once the recovery process begins, it is all about learning to identify stress in your body,
right,
and learning to develop healthy coping skills to regulate yourself. And those are really, really good ones, as along with, you know, medication, community, some type of recovery program, spirituality, all the other things that we've talked about over the years.
Those in particular really highlight a physical boundary where and a person being able to have boundaries with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the addict, so often the issue is the addict cannot set and maintain their own personal boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're learning on a daily basis to stop and do meditation or to stop and ask themselves, where am I feeling stress, and doing some mindfulness about that, they're beginning to have the process of recognizing their own personal boundary.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and that's absolutely right. Yeah.
So it's a complicated process, and one that isn't going to happen overnight for any of the folks involved. And And that's okay. That's okay as long as people have some hope and some understanding that this will get better,
yeah,
and that there are things that can be done in many ways to help calm the situation. So that's one of the important things, too, is it's not let's fix the patient. Let's get this identified patient, as we say, mm-hmm, fixed, and then everything will be okay. No, it's the system. This is a family disease, mm-hmm, and this is a system that needs to be fixed, not just an individual cog in the wheel that's broken down. The whole system needs help, and part of this is some education about what boundaries are and then how to set them and how to live with them.
Yeah, we can go into detail in the following segment about that. But also, so there's such a large percentage, because this is a genetic disease, there are so many instances where not only is the patient, but the grandparents, the great-grandparents. So this isn't just an isolated situation. This has been passed down through generations, these behavior patterns, the way families deal with it, the way they talk about it, think about it. So, you know, it's not just what do I say and when do I say it.
Exactly. We're going to take a break now. Please stay tuned, and you'll learn about more about when to say it and how to say it. Please stay tuned.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. On Medicine on Call, we talk about more than medicine. It's about how to take control of your mind, body, and spirit.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and you're listening to America's Web Radio. Today in studio, I have with me David Donaldson from the Atlanta Healing Center and our special guest, Alice Wellens, who's a licensed clinical social worker and has a practice here in Atlanta where she deals with folks of all ages and all different problems, but you do have a specialty in working with patients who have the disease of addiction and their families. If you want more information about Alice and her practice, please go to her website, which is a great website with lots of good tools, information, resources. Her website is Alice, A-L-Y-C-E, Wellens, W-E-L-L-O-N-S.com. AliceWellens.com. Her phone number is area code 404-664-3222. 3110. Did I get that
you
right?
Got it.
Sorry, my vision blurred on me just a minute. 404-664-3110. And what I'd ask you to do is to get pen and paper with you next time, because we will give her information so that you can learn more about her practice and have some really good resources about some of the topics that we're talking about today. So the issues of boundaries. It is, I wish it were as simple as giving people a list. Now say this here and do this there and it's all going to be okay. It's really a little more complicated than that.
It is so much more complicated than that. For all the reasons that we were saying earlier, that it's typically a long-term generational situation. People are typically asking for boundaries in the middle of the crisis. So it really makes it tough. But there are a few things that I try to give as guidelines to help people begin to cultivate a sense of boundaries for themselves, like in the heat of the moment. And the first one is I encourage people to think about boundaries as you're not telling the other person what to do. Because a lot of times that's what people think a boundary is.
Right.
I'm going to tell you to be here at 4 o'clock. Okay, that's not a boundary. You're telling the other person what to do. A boundary is telling the other person what you're going to do. Meaning, so I'm going to tell you that I'm going to be here at 4 o'clock and I'm going to start at 4 o'clock. If you're here or not, that's up to you. Or, you know, what things beyond your means. But so I'm not telling you what to do, I'm telling you what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And once people can start to flip that in their mind, that opens up a way mm-hmm. for them to start thinking about it. And that gives them some relief because they've been trying the other way for so long.
Yes.
And part of that is in parenting. You tell your kids what to do.
Right.
You know, this is the
bedtime.
Schedule of the house. It's
right.
Bedtime. You
mm-hmm.
brush your teeth. And I'm going to tell you to do that because I'm your parent. That's part of it. So there's a shift that has to happen mm-hmm. in some of that thinking when you're talking about the disease of addiction. The other thing that I really encourage parents and family members to do is to not focus on what they can't do, because you'll hear them all the time. I can't tell them I'm going to pull them out of college. I can't tell them I'm going to take away their allowance. Okay, let's don't focus on what you can't do. Let's focus on what you can do and start small. What are some small things that you can say you're going to do? And then let that start to build traction and experience and energy itself. So those are the two kind of tips I mm-hmm. try to help people start to work with.
Good advice, because I think that's really important. I once heard a speaker talk about domains,
mm-hmm.
and this kind of intrigued me because and it's another way to think about the categories of boundaries and what boundaries are. So he talked about the different domains that people mm-hmm. Have and the different ways in which you're going to allow one person to have more access or be more of a part of something than something else. And he gave this example. He said you have the financial domain, which is, you know, this is somebody that you would give your bank card to, or that you would be on their checking account. I trust my accountant to give me good advice on my taxes, and she knows a whole lot of stuff about me and my life, but I would never get advice from her about how to take care of my physical health.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different domains and different experts in different domains. So your physical, your personal, your emotional, your material, mm-hmm. financial, all of these things are different categories or areas in your life for which there are things that are okay and things that aren't okay. And beginning to think about it in that way, that we all have boundaries. Mm-hmm. I trust my doctor with my life,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to give him my bank card or my social security number to use randomly. So there's different levels of trust and different arenas in these domains that we have. And so we have set some of these up already, maybe very broad categories, but sometimes helping people to think about it in that way, mm-hmm. too, that there are different things. A boundary isn't the same thing in every situation with every person.
So are you saying, so that would be something like, let's look at the financial domain. Mm-hmm. What are some boundaries you want to work at, work within that domain?
Mm-hmm.
Then what about the living domain?
Correct.
What are some boundaries you would like to work in that domain? Because a lot of times people start talking and they immediately get overwhelmed.
Yes.
And they start, you know, get paralyzed or awfulizing, and they can't get a lot of traction. So the domain kind of helps them mm-hmm. look at each segment.
Right.
Yeah.
And not start bringing in the whole list of everything bad or everything that's gone
yeah.
wrong. No, let's keep our focus.
Mm-hmm.
Here is our domain. This mm-hmm. is what we're talking about today. And how do we want to structure that? And what am I going to do to participate in the domain? And, mm-hmm. and what might you consider doing
mm-hmm.
to
well,
make
and,
this
and
work?
It kind of highlights how in addiction the relationship will start expecting that other person to be all of those domains.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You know, I've got a headache, here, give me your pain medication. I have a bill due, here, give me your money. And that expectation is just there as a matter of fact. And the other person just goes right along with it because
yeah.
it's become such a pattern, as you were saying earlier, that the boundaries just kind of disappear. I really liked when you were talking about the what I'm going to do versus what you're going to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we often talk about not using you statements mm-hmm. and using I statements, but not in such a clear way
mm-hmm.
as you
mm-hmm.
phrased it. I'm going to close my bank account
yeah.
today and stop writing checks for
yeah.
yours.
Right. For your rent.
For your rent.
I will write checks for your cell phone and your health insurance. So I'm not telling you what to do about
mm-hmm.
your rent.
Right.
I'm telling you what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
about my checkbook.
About my checkbook
mm-hmm.
and how I choose to spend my money. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're talking it in a very kind of clinical way, but that's gives an example. And then I often tell family members, you have to find your own voice in that and how you can talk to your family member and your own language in it. But those can be your guideposts. And this is something I think you are both saying at different times. It also, one of the things that happens in addiction is everybody feels so disempowered. So it really creates this empowerment back to everybody,
mm-hmm.
to the family, to feeling like, okay, these are some things I can say and
mm-hmm.
I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then also back to the person who has the disease of addiction, it gives them some empowerment in this very paradoxical way.
Yes.
First, like you were saying earlier, David, it gives them that sense of, well, let me check in and see actually how I feel about this, what I think about this, what my needs actually are in each of these domains. For so many people, those very basic ways of looking at themselves and their lives has not happened during addiction.
Mm-hmm.
They've just lived in that chaos. They've lived in fear. They've lived in shame. And so they're not actually taking a thoughtful look at what they think, feel, and need. And that's that coming home that you hear you know, clients talk about, coming home in that way of just, well, how would I want to live? How would I want to get my rent? How would I want to eat, you know, to take care of my hygiene?
Because that's the other part of the message that the person with the disease of addiction mm-hmm. gets is, we don't really think you're capable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to have to step in here and call an attorney, and we're going to have to go to the bank and fix this loan, and we're going to have to call your health club and figure out how to get you out of that lease that you got yourself into, because we don't really think you can do this.
Yeah.
And so in response to the other piece of what you just said, which is this really helps the person with addiction begin to realize their own self-esteem and improve that by, okay, I don't like it that you're closing your checkbook to my rent, but that must mean you think I can figure this out. That's the mm-hmm. other unconscious part of the message
yeah.
that, okay, we've got faith that you'll figure this out. Somehow you're going to figure this out, and we think you can do that. That's the message. It's an uncomfortable one, and they mm-hmm. don't necessarily want to hear it, nor do they want to deliver it,
mm-hmm.
but it is so helpful all the way around.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the number one thing that everybody's going to say in that scenario? Let's just take the rent scenario. We could write this out totally. The family is going to say, but what if they don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get evicted, and then they show up in crisis at our doorstep. So we're getting the 1 minute break signal. Maybe we should save that and address it in our next segment, because I think that becomes the real nitty gritty.
Exactly.
Questions.
It's
families.
Easy to say. It's
right.
Much harder to do.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to know what to say and how to do it, please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Michael Connelly inviting you to listen each Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern to my show, Our Constitution, only on America's Web Radio.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is America's Web Radio. Today I have with me our special guest, Alice Wellens, who is a therapist extraordinaire and certainly a colleague and a friend of the show, and we appreciate her being here with us today. She has held many leadership positions here in Georgia and nationally with the Social Work Association of Georgia, the Georgia Society for Clinical Social Work. You're past president of that. You're also a certified Imago therapist, which I think is potentially another show for another day, such a wonderful type of therapy, particularly for couples. I think it's a very healing, positive therapy that works very well. If you'd like more information about this and many other things that Alice does in her practice, please check out her website at www.alice.com or call her at 404-664-3110. And you'll be able to get a wealth of information about all kinds of topics and services that she provides in her practice. So right before the break, we were setting up the difficult conversation in the domain of finances and the particular situation around setting a boundary, a financial boundary, with a person who has the disease of addiction and their families about what they are willing to open their checkbook to, as David Donaldson, who is also with us here from the Atlanta Healing Center, had said, this is what I'm willing to open my checkbook about, and this is what I'm not. And as you pointed out, Alice, this is a lot more difficult conversation than we make it sound here.
We make it sound so clean and easy.
Friendly.
Friendly, right.
But because partly the scenario that you are presenting is that they're going to do this, and then in a few days they're going to have their child knocking on their door.
Mm-hmm.
I think most parents get into this mind trap of, I'm going to do this, and then my child's going to be homeless.
Yeah.
And their brain goes to a much scarier place. And so they're,
I don't know,
they're opening
the door. Knocking on the door is pretty scary, too.
They're throwing the door open right. when their child is looking at homelessness.
Right. And that's that piece of extremes and black and white and all or nothing and fear. You know, they're very fearful, and rightly so. They've seen a lot of suffering in all areas of their child's life and of their families. So when that scenario unfolds in your office, like, okay, I will tell my child that I'm not going to cover their rent anymore, but what do I then do when they show up at my door? You know, okay, either in a relapse or in a crisis, or they call me from the emergency room or the, you know, holding cell. And that is really, that's the nitty-gritty. I mean, mm-hmm. that's it right there.
And possible.
And possible. And that's, you know, that's the very first thing, is you want to validate that. Like, that very much could happen. So, you know, let's talk about it. And so I imagine we can all talk about what we say to people in those situations, but it's very similar to what we say to people who are on the journey of recovery, which is, it's not a linear process. Mm-hmm. There are lots of two steps forward, one step back along the way. However, we are working towards this piece, so it's not a fail or succeed operation here. So let's set it up also in a realistic mode, because just like a client can't come in and say, okay, I've been, you know, on an alcohol bender for 28 days and I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and get a job and go to work. Like, that's probably not going to happen. So it's probably not going to happen for a family to be able to say after all these years, okay, I'm going to not pay your rent anymore starting tomorrow. So the first thing is, let's set it up for success. You know, what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
When could that start? What would that look like? What is your support system? Are you and your partner on the same page with this? What do you all need from each other around having this conversation? Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, starting and letting some of those conversations happen, strengthening all those side parts before you get right into that crisis, chaotic piece. That's usually the first conversations I try to have when people throw back in your lap, but what if?
But what if?
And when?
And how am I going to manage this?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not the end of the world. If that does happen, that did not happen because you did not pay their rent.
Correct.
And you've got to remind them of that, because they believe that in some part of them. And you go back to that classic Al-Anon statement of, you didn't cause it, you know, and you can't cure it.
And you can't control it.
And you can't control it. The three C's. So if you could have gotten them sober already, you would have.
Right.
So if you can't get them sober, you can't make them use. You just don't have that much power. And then, you know, you can, depending on the relationship with them and what kind of program they have, a lot of times family members, that immediately provides some relief. If they do show up at your door, that's a great question. Let's start to develop a plan. What might you want to say at that point?
Mm-hmm.
What resources might you need to have in your hand or easily accessible for that moment? Because you want to be ready and not have to get ready in that moment.
Right, because chances are, if you're not ready, it's going to be complicating the situation so much more than
right.
it needs to be.
Because you're gonna react instead of have a proactive reaction.
Exactly.
And that then involves getting information. So do you want to set the boundary? So let's take the treatment domain. Do you want to set the boundary that you will financially support them in a treatment setting? Mm-hmm. Okay. So if they come to you, then you can say, I would love to support you in your recovery. And here are three places that we would be willing to support your treatment.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like those, then you could find a comparable situation, and we'll talk about that. So there's some leeway. It's not black and white.
Right.
You don't have to get stuck in that all or nothing thinking. And that helps families just start to relax. And once they can relax, then they can start thinking and start to come up with some of their own mm-hmm. wisdom.
Here are the homeless shelters.
And if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to pay for treatment because you've already paid for so much or you just don't have that accessible mm-hmm. to you, here are the list of low-cost or no-cost shelters or treatment centers in the area or the AA hotline. Mm-hmm. I mean, go basic. I can't save you. If I could have, I would have, but here are some resources that mm-hmm. can.
Mm-hmm. And what's so important in this is getting those words,
mm-hmm.
you know, going back and listening to this and writing down those words, because in the moment when you open the door and there's your loved one standing there, if you don't have those words already written down and practiced, you're not going to find them. Just from my mm-hmm. own experience, having a family member call up and say, hey, can I live with you?
Right.
It's a shocking question to hear
yeah.
if you're not prepared for it.
Exactly.
And then to be able to come out with a healthy answer is not always the easiest thing, even for someone who does this for a living.
Right, because you think the answer in that moment is either yes or no. And it really doesn't have to be yes or no. It's, well, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need? I can't give you lodging, but I can give you some information.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really believe that you can figure this out. You're giving that, you're imparting that belief of to them. So, right. So having had these conversations with your partner, with a family member, with your therapist, with your support team, your Al-Anon sponsor, whatever it is, that whatever program you're working, helps you be prepared. And it helps you not see it in such a crisis mode at that moment. I like the term proactively reactive. Because you're still going to be reactive. This is your child.
Course.
This has been a long road, and you want this person to be okay. But that goes back to, I'm not going to tell you what to do, and I'm not going to focus on what I can't do, but here's what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, before we move into the last segment, if we could move into adult couples.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of times the boundaries are one couple is saying, one member is saying, you need to change this so my life will be better, and the other person is saying the same thing. And in particular, in the more intimate portions of the relationship, where one person feels like, I've been doing a lot of work, and we're still not having any sort of intimacy, any sort of connection, any sort of closeness, and the other person is sitting back waiting for work to happen, and none of that's happening. So I wonder if we could hear some of what you do in the adult relationships.
Are we with addiction?
Well, with boundaries in recovery.
Okay,
boundaries in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much in active addiction, but couples who have been in recovery, say, for a few months, and they're wanting to be able to have their relationship
yeah.
come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that can go both ways. Oftentimes, the addict or alcoholic can get into recovery, and the family doesn't start growing and changing. And then sometimes the family starts to get in recovery,
yes.
and the addict and alcoholic isn't growing and changing. And so in both of those examples, there's a sadness, because what a couple who's bonded and connected because they want to be together, not for some contractual reason, every problem that they have is really about the fact that they want to feel close to each other, and whatever it is that's going on is disrupting that.
Mm-hmm.
And in our most, as we've talked about in our attachment series,
yes.
I can't get through a segment without talking about meditation or attachment, is when that bond is threatened, it shakes their very most primitive areas of their brain. They feel it as if they almost aren't going to survive, which is how an addict feels when you take away their drug and alcohol. So all this wiring is in a very similar area. But David, when I talk, when I have couples in the room, what I try to talk to them about is that it took a long time for them to get here. One, you know, recoveries are not often linear. And where can they find small places that they are connecting in these moments? And let that start to be some traction. You know, like, oh, we like to listen to music together. We like to walk the dogs after dinner. And start to create some safe dialogues. And I will use a lot of the Imago dialogue mm-hmm. in those instances because it gives this safe way to have a dialogue back and forth without it devolving into an argument.
Mm-hmm.
And I really try to use the words curiosity and grace. You know, that it takes time. Another thing is if they're in the program of recovery, I'll often start to use some of those techniques in the office. So I'll start to have them talk about things they're grateful for and start to use some of that recovery language in the office that way. But that's a big conversation. We should definitely have that.
We should definitely have that, but not right this minute because we're going to take another break. So please stay tuned. More answers in just a moment.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Peter Wallace, inviting you to listen every Sunday morning to Day One with inspiring preachers from America's mainline churches on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and
doing all of these things. And what? How do you think that's impacting the marriage? A marriage or partnership look at, maybe you're not going to grow. My wisdom will take me to my truth. That's wonderful.
It's probably a great place to start, you know, because when you're letting the...
What will happen is the person who has not started their own healing will start to pull for chaos. So it's gonna take a while, and just sort of to take the pressure off, and see if they'll come on their own to their own recovery. What happens when somebody doesn't? Time has gone by, and one partner is just not looking at their own issues. And, you know, a lot of times that's a very sad thing. And if the couple can stay in couples therapy, you can just start to name that and ask questions and get curious about it. I noticed that you're not getting support, that you're not seeking individual therapy or working a recovery program. Can you tell me more about that? What is it like to have your partner be doing all of these things? And how do you think that's impacting the marriage? How do you all think that's impacting the marriage? Now, these conversations don't go well, you know, because the person who is not open to looking at their own issues is not open to it for a reason. They have some type of a belief that it's too painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easier to keep the focus on the other person and their chaos and their problems. And when you marry or partner up with somebody who has the disease of addiction, you never have to look at yourself. You know,
right.
you can always
There's
be
plenty of material.
There's plenty of material. But when the dust settles and then settles again and then settles a little bit more and a few years have gone by, what will happen is the person who has not started their own healing will start to pull for chaos. If, you know, probably they're pulling for it all along, but really start to pull for chaos. And that is just something that can be named, can be, have a question asked, is what is that? What do you think is happening right here? Just continuing to plant those seeds. But oftentimes it's just helping a marriage or partnership look at, maybe you're not going to grow together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's not what's going to happen.
Throwing out that boundary of sometimes these conversations just don't go well is probably a great place to start. You know, because when you're letting them know up front, we're going to go into some difficult conversations, mm-hmm. and y'all might walk away from here not liking me sometimes, mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you go where you're about to go.
Right, right. And especially when you're holding the mirror up to something, a dynamic, and somebody who does not want that mirror held up.
Right.
And we know what that's like when we're dealing with addiction, but we have this great roadmap, you know, with addiction, and we've got all kinds of sayings and people to call and things to do,
right.
and a wealth of knowledge on that. But there's very little about the partner who at some point is going to refuse, you know, to do their own healing. And that's tough. And that circles back to me to the whole premise of addiction in general, which is learning distress tolerance. You know, mm-hmm. learning to tolerate stress before it becomes intolerable. And for a marriage as an entity in and of itself, or a partnership or a family, sometimes they have to learn to sit with very distressing interactions or stretches of time,
mm-hmm.
or feelings about what's actually happening. Feelings in the coupleship around, I am now married to somebody who, in this moment, is not committed to their own healing. I have to sit with that because the fantasy is I can get them to change.
Right.
Just like their fantasy was, I can get the alcoholic
to
change.
Stop drinking. Right.
So it's a shared experience of what happens if this is just what's not happening right now. Let that energy just sit and learn to tolerate something that feels intolerable.
And decide what are your boundaries around that. Because mm-hmm. sometimes your boundaries, as you said, this is what I can do. Mm-hmm. I can come to couples therapy. I'll be there on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. These are the things that I can do.
Continue my recovery program. Continue my support system. And let that lead me to my next truth.
Right. And sometimes the truth is that if couples are growing at different rates, and often the one who wanted so much for their loved one to get into recovery is now the one who is not willing to do the work that they need to do to heal, get past their anger, their resentments, their fear, their mistrust, sometimes the relationship can't go on. And sometimes the answer is it can't go on.
That's right. And you have to live into that. So when they're in your office, you know, it's that what happens if they're not going to do the work? What happens when my child shows up at my door? It's like, okay, we really want to talk about living into those things and having ideas and resources and connecting to your own wisdom around, you will live into that and you will know when you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know right now, then you don't know.
Then that's the answer.
Then wait.
Mm-hmm.
You will know something when you know it. And that feels very empowering, putting that knowledge back onto them.
Well, it's also challenging the notion of I just need to run away.
Yeah. I can't take it.
I need to medicate it. I need to escape.
I need you to fix.
Which is all going to be the foundation for the next drink. This way they're doing their work and their own healing and leaving. If they get to a place of leaving, they're leaving because it's right.
And how empowering is that? You can trust your instincts and you can begin to trust yourself and your own wisdom. And we have trusted your wisdom today, Alice, and thank you so much.